having a book slash forum discussion. Basis of the discussion is on the book Is the Homosexual My Neighbor? Another Christian View, and I'm not going to talk about the authors. The people that are going to be talking with you, not at you, but we'll each have an opportunity to express something, a reaction that we had either to the book or whatever, are Doug Norseth, Allison Wee, Miriam Schultz, and then Catherine Osler. You all know that. I'm being sort of participant slash, I don't know, organizer slash moderator or something. To begin, there's a couple of things that we've discussed ahead of time that I just want to make sure are clear. The reason we're having a discussion this evening is to talk about homosexuality, gay and lesbian people among us. We would ask that you approach this evening as a way of being honest about what your concerns, your fears, your beliefs, whatever they are, that it's a time of honesty. There is no question which we could consider foolish or out of bounds. Everybody has questions and concerns at some level, or statements of faith or whatever, and that's all important. What we also want you to know is, for the sake of those of us who are here, if you direct a question at any one of us, we obviously have the right to choose not to answer that question, not out of disrespect for you as an individual. I think the questions are all to be respected, but simply out of our own personal choices. It's something that we prefer not to talk about in a public situation. I think two theological questions are welcomed. I don't know that anyone here is an expert enough to answer it, but we can all field that. And I think from a base Christian community perspective, we all have knowledge of faith and our own theological perspectives. So there's nobody here who can't talk about issues of faith and theology as they surround this question, this discussion this evening. Those are the basis for which we'll start this evening. And what we'll do is each one of us will take a brief amount of time to talk. We're not going to go through and just go through a specific book review for you. If people have read it, that's terrific. You may want to respond specifically to it. But we understood this book as being the beginning point of discussion. What we're going to do, each of us, is in our reading of it, certain questions and concerns and issues have arisen, and we'll each approach it from that direction. So we'll go actually in the order we're sitting. How unique. briefly, and then open it to discussion from the floor on questions and answers. So Doug.
If I start coughing, forgive me, I'm getting over a cold. My reaction to the book, or the reaction to a certain part of the book on homophobia, I think was the particular chapter. I was struck by, and I've been struck by lately as I've been analyzing some certain things, I was struck by the philosophical differences between many people who I would describe as conservative Christians and gay Christians over the issue of choice. And it's interesting that we had a Vespers about choice tonight. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I almost think of as a revelation for me lately. But I think the problem that the reason that conservative Christians, many of them, really hate me being in the church is because they think that I chose to be gay. They think that that was a choice that I made sometime in my life. And we live in a culture which really blames people for making the wrong choices. Poor people are blamed for not making choices that enable them to be economically better off. So it's part of our culture. It doesn't just affect gay people. But my experience as a gay man, and I think the experience of most, virtually every gay man that I've ever met, has been that they did not choose to be gay. It's just something that they knew at some point. they may choose to hide from that fact or choose not to acknowledge it, but they certainly never chose their orientation. And I can't speak for women, but I would have to say for most of the gay women I know, I would have to say that that's been what the story that they have told me. I think that what conservative Christians, I don't have a better term for that, I mean, it may be too partisan of a term, but I think the problem is they see gay people, not knowing gay people, not experiencing them in their day-to-day lives, they see us as choosing something. And that's why there's such a conflict, because if we chose this, then their children might choose it. And if gay people are role models in our schools and in our churches, then my child might become homosexual. And gay people don't see it that way. We were raised and surrounded by heterosexual people that didn't influence us one bit. We grew up with no incentive to be gay whatsoever. From the time many of us were very young, we heard every negative epithet, every negative stereotype you could ever imagine. When I came out, I didn't even know any other gay people in the whole world. But I had to at some point acknowledge to myself that I was. So I don't want to get off into that personal testimony time, but I do want to say that what I think the book did for me was it helped clarify the contradiction, the clash that we see in the church between those who believe that we've chosen something and are willfully continuing to choose that in defiance of all natural law or whatever, versus our own perspective that we are who we are. So I think I'll just stop at that point.
Thanks. One of the things that's become clear to me in the last 3 months, I guess, particularly, is I've talked to the community on community meetings at other times about the fact that homosexuality is not an issue for me. I have had people I've known for years, people I've loved dearly. It's been a process for me to come to terms with it, but I've come to a point where I've said it's not an issue for me. What has happened, however, is I've changed my mind. It perhaps is not an issue for me in the sense that I don't have to live with it on a day-to-day basis. It's not my individual orientation. But there are people that I care tremendously about whose lives are constantly being affected by that, of people rejecting them simply because they don't understand. And it, for me, it's been a bit of a revelation to move from a place of not having to speak out, not having to be actively supportive for the concerns and rights of all individuals, to saying I have to move to a place of advocacy, a place where I speak my vocally speak my support, actively be supportive. That comes from a variety of places. One of those is a bit of a broader conversation that I think we as a church or members of the church or members of the human race, whichever you would choose, need to talk about. And that's our own understanding of sexuality. For me, and I think, I think that as a people of the church, particularly with the history we have from Augustine on down about rejection of our sexual being and our sexuality, we've lived with a history that denies ourselves as sexual beings, and we've tended to focus on sex, not understanding ourselves as sexual beings, easily determining who fits within the norms of what we think is appropriate sexual behavior. I think, from my perspective, until we as a heterosexual community come to terms with our own sexuality and how sex fits within that realm, that we're going to constantly be having to deal with issues of concerns for the homosexual community, homophobia, fears of that, and trying to be in something of either working in apologetics or apologizing, which to me is part of what this book is about. And I'm not going to go into that too much, but just a process of sort of proving that homosexuality is an orientation and not a lifestyle. And those are some of the things that have come to my mind in our discussion today and in reading the book. I'll just leave that statement.
Boy, I feel like there are an awful lot of things I could say, and I'm not quite sure where to start. I guess the one thing that I'd like to say about this book, I don't know how many of you have had a chance to read this or are planning on reading it at some point later this winter. What I like about this book is that it approaches the biblical perspectives on homosexuality in a very thorough and analytical way. It takes each of the six verses in the whole Bible that talk about homosexuality specifically and summarizes an exegesis of where those verses, how they were being applied in the context that they were written, and talks about issues of translation and does that in a really clear way. So those of you who have concerns over those biblical passages might want to look at this, that part of this book. But it also, it goes beyond that biblical tradition and talks about a lot of the sociological issues involved in our culture and gender roles and family structure and ties them all in a pretty clear way. What I wanted to say in terms of my response to this book is that it's fairly dated. It was published in 1977, and things have shifted a lot, even in the last 15 years from when this book was written. There's a lot of psychological research that's documented in here that's very interesting, but there's further research that's been done in 15 years that that goes more in depth, or some of the information has shifted a little bit. And so those of you who've read this, I wanted to say from the perspective of a gay person that I think there are some things in here that aren't entirely accurate anymore. And part of that piece for me too is that the tone of this book is, like Catherine said, rather apologetic. It comes at these issues with very strong arguments and then kind of backs off a little bit in its tone, as if to say, well, we're sorry if this disturbs you, or you know, we really hope this isn't kind of bugging you too much or being too out of line or anything. And I have just found myself wishing that it just came across sounding a little more sure of itself, because I think its information is good and the argumentation is good, and I don't feel nearly as apologetic as this book comes across. I think Doug's point is a good one, that a lot of the debate arises from this question of whether or not a homosexual orientation is chosen, whether or not it's a piece of human nature that one can't shift, a gift from God, or just a bad behavior. And I agree as well that I don't think that I had a choice about whether or not I'm a lesbian, and most people that I've talked to in the gay community feel the same way. And I guess it's hard to know, since I don't know how many people have read the book or what people's... in that case, I think I'm just going to stop talking right now and wait to hear what people's questions and concerns are, so as to not be talking about things that aren't on people's minds, and just let Miriam go ahead.
I was raised in a community, slightly odd community, Allison was too, in which I never had a label for homosexuality. I think almost until I was in high school, I can't remember. In other words, homosexuality has never been a moral or a religious issue for me. It just absolutely never came up in that context, for whatever weird reasons. Nobody in my high school would run around calling each other fags or queers or, I mean, so it was not discussed in either a negative or a positive sense. Even by my parents, I never heard that. And a lot of what this book addresses is the morality or the theological implications of homosexuality. For me, homosexuality, consequently, has been an issue of civil rights. The way in which it becomes a moral issue then derives for me from the fact that it is an issue of civil rights. That there are people who really do live in fear, that there are people who are getting lynched and mugged because of their sexual orientation. And consequently, I feel it to be each of our moral responsibility to support homosexuals rather than condemn them. And that, in my personal opinion, it is therefore the church's responsibility as well to be accepting of homosexuality, because it does so much to set the moral tone of the country, whatever. That's where I stand. And this book does something to address the civil rights aspect of it. It talks about hiring, and again, it's elementary school teachers is the big one. But for the church and for Holden, I guess, the issue comes up in ordination. Whether to discriminate on that basis.
Okay. Well, why don't we just open it up for people either to make your own comments, ask questions of any one of us on the panel. We have the freedom to ask one another or you questions. What kinds of things either were raised by the reading of the book or your own concerns? And I don't want it to be totally objectified. I want it to have to do also with the life of this community and what kinds of issues Holden has to deal with in terms of its winter community and what kind of program and so forth we do in the summer. So it's all fair game.
I guess I thought of something.
Okay.
I'll just dive right in here and say something else. I guess I have an article in my room that I once again forgot to bring with me, but that talks about the biblical perspective. And the main thrust of, I think, this book and of this article that says it a little more clearly is that the Bible does not have a sex ethic. There's not a sex ethic in the Bible. The only thing present in the Bible is a love ethic. And that there are a lot of attitudes about human sexuality from the time and the culture that the Bible was written that present themselves within that, but that the true ethic is one of loving relationships. And I think that's a really important differentiation between, I think a lot of people put down the gay community arguing from the notion of there being a sex ethic and overlook the love ethic that's there.
Which is also discussed in this book. They point out that the church institution has contributed to the difficulty in gay people establishing loving relationships by forcing them to have relationships that are covered up, that they can't be open about.
Actually, if I have a question, I'll leave Brandon there. I don't, I'm kind of like Miriam. I've never questioned homosexuality. Like I've never not thought it was normal. And so I guess I have a hard time understanding why, before even the issue was fully understood, before I even knew what was going on at the community meeting where we discussed offering the first time, why my seams got really tight while I was sewing and my needle was shaking because there was so much tension in the room. I guess I would like to know why it's unacceptable for Holden to support the church, to support a church or a ministry where Christians are trying to help Christians who feel they don't have anywhere to go because of what the church is going on in the church. I guess I would like to know where people stand on that and why, because I didn't understand that. I'm not real familiar with the church, and I know what's going on with that church, but I don't understand what was going on here, because I must have missed something somewhere. But that was pretty darn tense.
Why did you think it was tense?
The first meeting with the offering thing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, what was your sense of it?
I just felt that it was really difficult for people, that it was a really hard issue, but it never got said why. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand what the danger is of Holden openly supporting a church in San Francisco that helps or has a ministry that deals with homosexuals. I don't understand that.
I would say it has to do with linkages. It has to do with the fact that Holden Village is supported by the ELCA, or is affiliated with the ELCA, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and the Lutheran Church of Canada. None of those churches are willing to ordain actively, gay and lesbian people who are actively in a sexual relationship. I mean, if they're celibate and are willing to say...
and silent.
I mean, that would be the preference. But there's also a point where there are certain bishops who would say, yes, as long as you're celibate, and say to me that that's where you are, and to this committee, that we will ordain you, but you better darn well stay that way. Now, the larger church would prefer silence, mm-hmm. And most bishops most likely, but I do know that there are some. So, in that particular ministry, you have three people who stood against the ELCA standards, and a church that the ministry is connected with that said basically no to the larger church, in this case the ELCA. So it's sort of, in a sense, a conflict of interest as far as Holden is concerned, and a conflict of individual interest, I think, within this larger community.
Well, I guess my feeling is we, in the past, with important issues, which I feel this is a civil rights issue, there have been a conflict of interest. There was a conflict of interest in the 60s about blacks, and considering blacks equal citizens and where they were at school. And if people wouldn't have stuck their neck out and said, hey, we support these people live in our community, these people exist, and they're important, then I don't think we wouldn't be where we are now. And so I guess I don't understand why Holden is not willing, when we have open, active, and much loved people in our community who are homosexual. I don't understand how this community cannot support people who are Christians. I don't understand the concept of being Christian and not supporting other people who are Christians but are just different from us. And I don't think, from what I got, when I've read what Jesus has said, my concept was that he said love your neighbor, and that he wasn't saying accept if they're homosexual. I don't think that's what he was ever saying. And I don't understand people not doing that and not supporting one another, no matter where they are in their process. I don't get that. No, and I think I need that explained by someone.
Bill?
Yeah. I don't know. I'll try that one. Growing up in Georgia,
prejudice against blacks, but also against homosexual. The way I remember growing up, you know, if you were homosexual, you were living in sin, the worst sin of all, and you didn't even discuss it. You would only criticize and make jabs and stuff at people like that. Even if you're a Christian, because, you know, that's just what the kind of society you were brought up in, you know. And as far as people in this community, I remember, you know, when I first got here to Holden, if that issue had been brought up about supporting a gay church, no, I wouldn't have supported it either. I would have a whole lot of trouble with that and say, well, I'm in the wrong place, you know. So, and we're from different backgrounds and different churches, so even here in the Holden community, you have different viewpoints, and so that's, I guess that's basically why we're doing what we're doing right now.
Because of the idea of consensus, if a few people don't agree, then we've decided that we can't do that. I don't know if that's the best thing to do in this situation.
I guess my understanding too, just of the Holden community, even though I've only been here 6 months, what I see, in most intentional communities like we have here, the funding, the economy, is based on sometimes an agricultural product. Sometimes they raise plums. Sometimes it's a manufacturer. You know, here our economy is based on tourism, essentially, the coming of Christian people, of the rest of the, just the rest of the nation, is what we're open to. And, you know, that's unique in that you can raise a plum without ideas, but you can't rely on people to not, you know, have particular concepts when they come up. And for a community to make, for this community, I think, to make that choice might in that sense cut our economic base out from under us. Due to the people that would not support that choice and thus would not support coming here.
I think if that's our main concern, we're real cowards.
I think this 20 years ago, they might have said, if you have a black pastor there, that's really going to hurt tourism. And I think that in 20 years later, people are going to be sitting there feeling pretty stupid that they, you know.
Well, 20 years ago, we just got women as ministers. 20 years ago, I mean, that was a reality.
But I think to sit there and say because it's going to hurt tourism, I think that's right.
I think that's one of the things that I found really intriguing in this book. They talk a lot about what's self-determined morality, what is socially implied morality, and what's the revelation of God. It's not always very easy to find that out. But one thing is pretty clear, and I think Mark's point requires of us an ability to try and discern as much as you can what Christ would do, what Jesus would do in that situation. If what controls us is concern for voices that are funding us, and then that's a big issue. I also understand that issue if you're the person or any of us are the people who are here on the gifts of those people and you're supposed to raise funds. But to listen to that and base your choice on the opinions of others can certainly block out God's voice and revelation that might come to us. I think we're in a situation of that. Are we hearing? For those who are in opposition, for those who have questions and concerns, I can try and recreate for myself where I was 10 years ago and why I just, A, didn't know any gay or lesbian people, or at least I didn't think so. In retrospect, I think I knew quite a few, and people that I've loved dearly since the day I was born. But my place, my opinion, was based on a very determined sexual attitude. A, I mean, just looking at the broader sense of sex, you know, sex is wonderful, don't talk about it. There's always conflicts of what is appropriate in terms of sex. Now, I'm frightened of talking about that, because the thing that happens when you talk about gay and lesbian people is you see them only as people who have sex. And frankly, maybe some of us would be happier if we were all in that situation, but I don't know too many people who are straight or gay, and, you know, it would be bored, I don't mind. That's a concern too, this process of objectification of people to their genitals. And I see that, I hear that a lot in when we are talking about the issue, this fear of molestation of children, of whatever it is, all those evils, those perversions, that suddenly get placed on people who are loving, caring people who want to be in loving, caring relationships. I think, and Miriam said, that the church has been in a process of perverting that love by forcing people to stay in the closet, by forcing people to go to places like, well, there are some bars in New York that I know of, that you seek out one-night stands instead of being in a relationship that's open and loving and caring. My opinion is God smiles on loving, caring relationships, whether it's gay or whether it's straight. And God is in pain when there's an aberration of that love.
I guess one thing that ties into that that this book brings up is that in the Catholic Church, if you have incidental homosexual experiences and bring them to the confessional or whatever, I'm not Catholic, I don't know exactly how it works, but if you confess to having had homosexual incidences, you can receive absolution for that and be continuing to be take communion and be part of the community or whatever. But if you're a gay person and you admit that you love someone and are in a long-term committed relationship, implying that, you know, it's not a one-night stand, it's not incidental, this is the relationship that you want to commit your life to, that you can't receive absolution for it, and you get thrown out of the church. And that kind of message is going to obviously cause a lot of pain on the part of gay people who want to have committed long-term loving relationships but are told, I'm sorry, that's inappropriate. Love that lasts a long time is bad for you, and we must prefer that you just went and messed around with whoever you want and came back and told us about it. You know, that's a really mixed message that I don't think holds up under the notion of what is God's will for us in relationships, you know, in relationship with whoever.
Part of me wants to say, I still have questions. I still don't understand. I have attractions for women. I think we're all on a continuum. Let me start this in a certain way. I think we all have a continuum of sexual attraction to people. Some people are clearly towards the heterosexual end, and some are clearly toward the homosexual end. But many of us, in my opinion, in terms of sexuality, have relationships, and it's a driving force, if you understand it as a gift, in relationships and how we communicate with one another beyond just a verbal communication, but interaction. But I still have questions. I still struggle with how does it all fit together? And I want to be honest with that and say that to you. But what says to me is what I've already articulated, and that's that what I can understand is God's desire for us to be in loving, life-giving relationships. And if we can't be supportive of that, then I don't understand it. That's what has changed me. It's not been, if I had been left to try and understand from a cognitive perspective when I am not a gay person, an attraction to a sexual attraction to another woman, I wouldn't get very far. But by the fact that friends of mine are hurting can respond in that kind of a process. I don't want to leave Melissa's question unanswered, but I do have a sense that this community this year is more open in terms of people who are gay and lesbian than has been true, at least in the last couple of years. We've had people here, but not everybody's been able to say it, and we may have people who are not out of the closet.
I guess what I have to say about that is that I feel like the community here is a very safe community. One thing I love about being here is that I know everybody on some level, and I don't have to fear about whether I'm going to get beat up for walking out the door in the morning for looking like I do, or for the fact that people know that I'm a lesbian. The fact that I've been vocal about that in the last 4 years of my life in wider society is a really terrifying thing. It can be really scary, and I know that this is a safe place, and because we all live here and work together, I have a certain trust level with people that is really wonderful. And yet I struggle with the fact that here the worship committee is trying to come up with a place to send money to that fits these qualifications of, yes, we as a community side with the oppressed and want to reach out in Christian love to everyone, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden there is a tension level in the room and people are saying, we cannot support this ministry. And that felt like a slap in the face. I just have to say that I don't know exactly where that was coming from. And I think that's part of Melissa's question, is that I don't know what people who live right here now in this community, what their reasons are, what reasons they give for saying, no, we will not do that. Because if it's people that love me or have Doug be their nurse or, respect Juliet and are people who are in one-on-one situations saying, you are my community member, I care about you, we live in this community in a mutually needy and reciprocal environment. I mean, we all take care of each other. We all take care of one another's needs. And I think we, on that personal level, know that and acknowledge it. And I don't feel personally offended by any one individual in this community, but why that cannot be extended to a gesture such as where community money goes, that is a cognitive dissonance for me that I cannot put together and understand, and I think that's something that this community needs to address.
Terry and then Robert.
I think partly Bill has addressed it in speaking about people's historical background. We come here with upbringing and belief systems, and being at Holden is a chance to maybe take a look at some of that, or at least bump up against it. I'm also kind of surprised that we would expect a human institution like a church to be able to overcome these things. That kind of surprises me. I mean, it seems like the church is a flawed institution at its best.
I believe that it's flawed too, but I also have grown up in a Lutheran family with the understanding that the church is always striving to come as close to an understanding of God's will as possible. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see it sell itself short of that and say, because we're a flawed institution, we're going to not deal. Robert.
I just wanted to respond to what Melissa was saying, and also to give some background for myself. I think the point is that we're sitting here tonight talking about it. I don't think we're ever going to be able, not certainly not the foreseeable future, to come to some mammoth decision that is different from everything else. I think we're lucky to be in a place like Holden to be able to sit here and talk about it, because it seems that the church as a whole is not able to at the moment. think Holden, because of what it is, can set some kind of an example to the church in the process of talking about it. I probably was the one responsible for letting the worship committee come forward with the proposal that we support the ministry of in San Francisco, not the San Francisco, the St. Francis Church, but the ministry. And that was done because I believe a place like Holden, with what we profess to, etc., etc., should be doing that. But in bringing it up to the worship committee and in allowing it to then come forward to the community, it was being aware that people would feel a lot of pain about it. And Allison's addressed that, and there are a lot of other people who feel pain for different reasons. And that's sad, but I think that's what we're here for. And I think we're doing the right thing.
That's over Lon, and then that's over Julie and Kim and Sandy.
I guess I want to piggyback on Terry and Robert. I think it's kind of naive of us to think that we're going to have one vote to send money to support gay and lesbian issues and have it pass. I mean, when people have been fighting for this for years, and we all know how institutions work. We all know institutions are conservative and are not going to do anything quick, you know, without, you know, in many cases, lives being lost, you know. So part of me feels a little uneasy with that. I mean, this was our first stab at it. And then part of me feels like this is a real opportunity, to piggyback on what Robert said. Mm-hmm. This is a real opportunity for us, because sometimes Holden runs the risk of becoming a suburb, you know, and we get all happy and people hop off the bus from various colleges and everything's cool and everything's neat at Holden. And there's no struggle, you know. And to struggle with, you know, with this issue, I mean, I've heard people sit in the groups here, in the sessions here, and say, we have no issues, you know. This generation has no issues, you know. We have the 60s and we have this and we have that, but this, you know, and I think this is an issue, and it's something to wrestle with. It's an opportunity to dig in our heels and, you know, and go with it. I honestly didn't expect for a minute. I would have been knocked off my chair if I expect for a minute that we vote and boom, right away the first time we brought this up, everyone would go, great, we'll send the money to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. You know, it just does not work like that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. Julie?
Yeah, I guess I feel this urge to put my two cents in, whether or not it will be helpful, I don't know, but I think that some of the, you know, we're talking about, nobody in this room can really understand why anyone objected to the proposal. And I just think there's some very deep theological differences between people who come here. You know, I mean, we seem to all be in consensus that God is in support of loving, caring relations, life-giving relationships. But I think there are a lot of people who see the Bible as giving rules, you know, and that it's not just about loving, caring relationships. It's about this is right and this is wrong. And so I think for those people, you know, it's going to be, they're going to be thinking about it in a lot different way than I guess the consensus seems to be here about the way that we're thinking about it. And so, I mean, I guess I just want to say that we need to have, I guess, a more...
I want to just say what I said at the beginning, because I don't think the conversation can continue until we all start talking about where our theological perspectives are. We carry those in. We need to, unless we're willing to start articulating that at whatever level, and everybody's point is valid, I mean, I may not agree with it, and it may pain me, and it may cause pain to my friends, but at some level, if you don't talk about it, it's not going to happen. And so my encouragement is, for people who theologically are having this cognitive dissonance, this can't put it together, start talking about it, or nothing's going to happen. Karen, I had one, and then Sandy, and then...
I guess I was thinking along those same lines, and not really having an explanation why someone would feel that homosexual people are bad or going against Christianity. I mean, I don't understand that. But if they do, then it's kind of, the book gives an example of Huckleberry Finn, who has an opportunity to free the slave, Jim, who's captured, and he thinks it's wrong. I mean, God says that it is wrong to free that slave. And yet, deep inside of him, that is what he feels he needs to do, and he has the conflict with that. If he frees Jim, then he's going against God, and so then he'll be evil, and he doesn't know what to do with that. And yet, Huck turns out to be a strong enough person, I guess, to say, you know, I think I have to do this, and so he does that. And I mean, I guess that's what I am trying to say, is that I think it takes a lot of strength. If you think that something is wrong, how can you go against that? How can you just say, okay, God, I'm just going to go out on my own and believe in this, even though it's wrong and bad? I mean...
Sandy and Kate.
I was just going to say, I think this book is very valuable for people who do have that concept, because it goes absolutely verse by verse in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And it has, in contextual terms, explains the difference between love and lust, or life-giving relationships and what would be careless relationships or whatever. And it just blew me away that this whole offering issue was even an issue. I guess I'm so naive that I didn't realize that it would be a problem for people. And I find it very disappointing. I think, and I'd like to think that Holden is a place that we can't step out from the rest of the church. And the money we're sending is relatively little. It's just a very big symbol. And if I mean, this decision, is it consensus or majority or whatever? I almost think that we'll never come to 100% agreement on any offering issue. So, if most of the community feels that that was a good idea, I think we should have gone with that. But anyway.
Kate, did you want to respond to what Sandy just said, or something? Terry seems like, and I think that's the heart of the issue at this point. So I want to kind of focus on that.
Well, I guess part of, I just want to say that when it first came up, I have a couple of thoughts on it. One is that I lived in Key West, Florida, and I saw sort of a different gay population. It's quite open down there. And I guess part of it for me is I didn't realize some of the problems that gay people have, because I didn't see it with the people that I knew. So I guess that was one thing. And so when it was brought up, I guess I'm responding to the personal aspect of it, that it's like sort of I have my own interests or needs or something that I would like met. So like I've been poor, and that's been a real struggle for me. I mean, I was in welfare with two small children, and when we have solidarity meal, I mean, that's all I could afford to feed my children. So it's not that it was so much that I was against gay and lesbian, it's just that it meant more to me personally to support someone that's poor, because that's where I've been. And so I guess part of it is when it came up is not totally understanding some of the issues and just reacting from my personal experience, which was having been poor, and also that the gay and lesbians that I knew were coming from, I mean, different places in the interactions with me. I mean, I see that their problems were necessarily any worse than mine, but that being poor mattered to me. And so it wasn't. Also, it's when you say San Francisco, you know, that also has, it's sort of far away, and it means more to me to be able to send money to people in Chelan than I might see and run across and be with, I guess. So I'm wondering if some of that wasn't personal history types of stuff coming in when people were reacting to the gay and lesbian thing. Not so much that I wouldn't want to help that ministry, it's just that some of the other needs were more personal to me. Mm-hmm. And also to send it away to San Francisco, just, I mean, maybe there's a ministry in Chelan that would be, and I'd be more comfortable sending it there. Partly because I think that's sort of where I feel we have some community with. I don't feel like I'm in community so much with San Francisco. And maybe, you know, I need to think more in a broader sense. But I guess I wanted to explain that, some of my personal, why I didn't necessarily jump on the bandwagon and vote for that.
Thanks. Okay. Terry and Robert and Melissa.
I'm thinking about the way children learn things and learn things that are things that are wrong. Like, once there's this little girl that found a cocoon and she went running up to my mother with this thing. My mother thought it was the most horrifying thing she'd ever saw, and suddenly the girl thought it was horrifying. When Gretchen presented that, I didn't know what she was talking about, but I knew there was something wrong here. I didn't know what it was, but I knew there was a problem. And I think part of what's going on with this issue around, or at least its current debate, is that it was presented as we have a problem, like a big problem. We're not going to talk about it. We're just going to vote on it, get it over with. So, I mean, we're a bit on placing some fault, but also suggesting that the point is there are lots of different points of view here. As Julie points out, different ways of understanding God's word or the truth. And a lot of what we need to do as a community is sort of give space for people to process that and to hear each other. And I think that whole process we went through with trying to decide was premature. It was leaving all that process behind or forgetting about it. Like, that's the first step for us, just to do what we're doing now, to hear, to have a space where people can say where they come from, or how they got to where they are. And that's been a little bit neglected.
Robert?
You've asked a question of, you know, why, and some people have asked, well, why would I be a person to object to the offering going to the ministry in San Francisco? And so I want to think back on times in my life when I would have done exactly that. And I don't want this to appear as if, well, gosh, I progressed along the road and I'm pretty good, you know, because I've come as far, because I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I could be going in the wrong direction. Unlike Catherine and Miriam, I was lucky to go to a boys' boarding school in Britain. So I came across homosexuality at the age of 11. Pretty lucky. But I didn't, it's certain, it was a choice. It wasn't an orientation. Or if it was an orientation, there was a very high percentage of people oriented that way in the school I went to. And so I would like to ask, tell me more about the fact, I mean, how can you prove to me that it's an orientation? Not a choice. That's one question that I would have asked.
It's anyone that might want to respond?
I guess that's kind of a difficult thing. One thing this book addresses also is that the notion of sexual orientation is a complex one and isn't one that's completely understood and crystal clear to just about anybody. There have been a lot of studies done on it over a period of time, and I guess the best that people know at this point is this notion of a continuum of sexuality, and that at either end of this continuum is a percentage of the population who is exclusively heterosexual on one end and homosexual on the other end, but that in between there are a lot of people who have incidences or experiences or thoughts or whatever that may be a little bit of each, or predominantly one with incidences of the other, and it talks about the fact that in different settings there is vastly different kinds of behaviors that go on. They talk about in the book in male prisons that there's a very high incidence of homosexual behavior that is not related to the orientation of all the people that are there, but is a different kind of socialized phenomenon that goes on in same gender communities or whatever. And that's one thing that I would say, is that there is a difference between, I don't feel that I have a choice about my orientation. I, of course, have choices about who I am physical with. You know, I could choose to have a heterosexual relationship if I wanted to. I could choose to walk down the aisle with somebody if I wanted to, but that would not be what feels most comfortable or natural to me in sexually. I mean, that just wouldn't make a lot of sense. So I think that there are, of course, cases where people choose to engage in different behaviors that may or may not align with what they understand their orientation to be.
I think there's an age of exploration and experimentation. I'm not talking about space here. But I mean, when I think of myself, with Cindy Torning, my two doors down best friend, redhead, we used to go up into the fort that they had built in the garage. And I had never admitted this to anyone, so here it is, big revelation. We play strip poker up there. You know, did that make me, that my orientation, or was that simply a curiosity about the body and kind of a stretching out of my own sexuality and my own understanding of that? That's kind of too, when you get a bunch of boys together who are coming of age, I hope there's some curiosity going on there too. Rolando?
Well, in answer to you, I think whenever you play cards, it leads to that kind of behavior.
So, cards and nonsense. To live in a place of oppression. That's what I've never understood why people say it's choice. Because I don't know too many of my black friends or too many women friends who've not been able, or any list of people who have been in a place where they've not been given power, or who have been beaten, or who have been in a place of fear, who just said, oh, pick me, I'm going. Maybe Jesus, but beyond that, there's just not a lot of people who make that choice. So that's a,
I mean sex in general, mm-hmm. and I'm not talking about whatever lifestyle right. means. I don't know what that means.
Well,
but sex in general, I mean, aren't we all suppressing a certain amount of sex in general?
Well, I agree with you.
For some reason or another?
Well, that's why I said at the beginning, in my opinion, until such time as we as individuals, as members of the faith community or whatever, come to terms with our own sexuality and how sex fits into that, we're all going to be in a place of confusion and certain amounts of perversion in our own lives. Because you can't... I mean, if I feel bad about having sex, then I'm not going to be able to be honest with that person or with the rest of the community. If I find myself in a place of embarrassment or chagrin, then there's something that's sad about that, even if it's a celebration, even if it's an incredible gift. Melissa, I think her stitches are getting smaller. So we have to go ahead and Melissa.
I had two quick things. In response for Robert, what Bella was talking about, is it a choice or after the coming out vespers, and I think it was Juanita, but they had a forum afterwards. Juanita said, when that question was thrown out, she said, you know, it doesn't matter, because this is what this person is. This is what this person believes they are in their heart, because I believe, like Catherine said, no one would choose that. It would be like choosing to be converting to Judaism in Nazi Germany. I mean, during the war. I mean, it's not, I think, an easy road to hoe here. And so I think what I thought a lot about when she said that, it really doesn't matter, because that's where these people are at. And so I think you have to move on to how do we feel about how we're going to deal with it. And the one thing that I am a little bit concerned in this conversation, saying that this is how, maybe I am, and I am an idealist, and Miriam and I are both idealists. And so when I sit here and I say, I want to know why people feel this way, and I want Christians to be good and accept each other, and a person says they're a Christian and they act like a Christian because they're attracted to men or they're attracted to women, I don't understand why that's wrong and we don't support those people if we are Christians or if we believe in God or being good to each other. And so I don't believe saying that, oh, we're just in a stage where we talk about it, or, oh, this is an institution, it's going to take some time, let's slow it down here, that alarms me. And I know it's just because I'm an idealist, but like, seeing that disappoints me and it bums me out, and tourism is not...
It's a slap in the face.
It hurt me, that thing. I felt physically sick after that, like, thing that we didn't support. Now I've got the thing, because I can't even talk because I'm so upset. But I felt sick, and so I can't imagine what it would be like to be homosexual and to be at that meeting where they did not choose to send money to support a church that you believe in because you're a Christian. I think that would have killed me. That would have made me feel sick.
Allison's now not stitching, but hers will be smaller, and then Mark and Terry.
Oh, I've already lost track of some of the things that I was going to say. I guess one thing that I just wanted to throw out a little bit earlier, in as we all talk about this, where the communion money was going and everything, to me, I don't give a rip where those $4 go. I don't, you know? And to me, I would like us, I brought that up to begin with, not because I really want us to go back and bring it back to the worship committee and decide that we can send the money there, but that I am looking at it in the light of, this is an opportunity for us to sit down as a community and talk about what are the issues going on here. As Kate talks about the notion of San Francisco being pretty far away, I remember also from that discussion, Berlan saying, yeah, we don't here at Holden have a lot of connections with the poor, and so we should send that, you know, that makes sense to send some of that money to Chelan. And I was sitting in my seat going, where am I sitting? And who am I sitting next to? You know, that is a ministry that is in San Francisco, but it is one of the only ministries to the gay and lesbian community that is out and vocal, and that's its name and its purpose and everything. And I'm a lesbian person, and that means so much to me that it exists. And I'm here, and I'm your cook. And if I left, you know, you could all eat cereal every dang morning. And so I guess that's kind of where I'm coming from. There were a lot of other things that I, in the course of what got talked about. The communion money, I bring that up because that's, like Sandy says, a symbol of what we need to talk about here and what we need to begin discussing. And I tend to be idealistic, and that's why I throw out this impassioned question, why couldn't we come to that conclusion, you know, when people are all decent, loving people here. But I don't mean it in that sense. I also do understand the reality of the situation. I understand how slow institutions are to do things. I understand a lot of real things about this. And I don't expect us all to get up tomorrow morning and say, we're fine with it now and we're going to send our money there and no questions and whatever. I don't expect that. But I do expect that because of how we live with each other and how we respect one another, that each one of us does look at where we are at and work from there. And this book is one place where the biblical questions are addressed. This book was, the audience I think that it had in mind was a very conservative or fundamentalist or however you want to describe it, mindset, a very Christian in every sense of the word personality was who this book was written for, and it was trying to address issues of the gay community and address the questions that such a person might have, and I think it does a good job of that. And so I encourage anyone who hasn't read it yet to pick it up and still look at it, because that's a way to begin in that place. But I just have a concern at all times that any issue that we talk about doesn't become simply an intellectual one, and that in anyone's search to determine what does the Bible have to say about it, that we think about it in the sense of an embodied Christian community, that here we all are, and talk about our neighbors and talk about relationships.
Mark.
While we're confessing idealism, I too would like to confess tons of idealism as being probably the originator of idealism. And you know, as I said last night, I am one that waits ardently for the coming about of God with us, of the day that we can all live as God's people and love each other. And I would work ardently and as hard as I could for that. And if we commit, I will reach as far as I can, possibly, to support this community. I know this summer after meeting Jeff and Phyllis and Ruth, it was a very big turning point for me in my life. Up to that point, I had had at best perhaps a neutral tolerance for homosexuality. But being able to see them as people, being able to hear their stories, and actually being able to see the gospel in what they said and in what they preached, really was a real metanoia, a real turning over for me. The other thing that I would confess is that I am one that does not like to take heat. And if this is something that we support, we would have to support it completely united, because we will take a lot of heat for this, a lot. I don't have a concept for how much anger we would receive from other people for doing something like this. And I confess that I am afraid of that.
I'm wanting to push on this idealism a little bit. It sounds kind of like it's a great thing and it's idealistic, but I don't think it's very realistic, or I'm thinking that, I mean, imagine myself as somebody who took a real right and wrong attitude about the Bible. I'm being left behind, and people say, why aren't we Christians, why aren't we loving this and that? That really scares me. I mean, that's a party line, and I'm left out of it as a hypothetical conservative person who happens to be at Holden and happens to be very interested in changing their life, taking a look at things. Or maybe just being here and not really with the program at all, but I'm still here.
Can I respond to that? I think that it's very important that people are here to grow, and we're all coming from different places. But as a gay person, I need to hear what other people are thinking. Mm-hmm. And when we had that particular discussion over this issue, it was decided the money would not go there, but I never heard one reason why. Mm-hmm. There was never any reasons why. That's what bothered me. If people come out and give me reasons or explain where they were coming from, then we have a dialogue. And that's very important. So if people have objections or problems, the church is the place, I think, where we should be able to discuss this stuff. If we can't discuss it in love here, we can't really discuss it anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do the best I can to be open and sensitive to people who have problems with me. And I hope they're open and willing to share those problems. That will help me to grow, and maybe that will help them to grow too.
I'm going to... I'm going to do something, which is, A, I'm getting cold, because I'm supposed to be stoking, and I haven't since we started. So I'm going to take two more comments and be a part of what I hope is the continuing, the beginning of a discussion. This is just the beginning. I think to say what Doug said, this is the start. Be honest, be open. I know these, for instance, these two particular people are very willing to talk individually, and there are many others, and without that kind of conversation, it's not going to continue. So Vermont and Marion, and then we'll officially end it in the kingdom.
I think that you people who are up there now, particularly Doug and Allison, are scapegoats. And I think our talking about, and I don't just mean the village, but I mean in general, talking about gays, we're hiding behind you all, letting you all take the heat. Because if there was a panel, you'd have a gay person up there, you had a person who maybe had sex three times, another person who hated sex, another person who was a sex junkie. I mean, if you're going to talk, if a lot of the talk about being gay centers, I think, around sexuality in general, because if you don't fit into the heterosexual, monogamous, married thing, then you're out of the boat anyway, period. You know, and so that panel should be full of a bunch of people, you know. And also, I think the what gays and lesbians do is reject a big part of society. I mean, they're out there in the open saying, I'm not going to live like that, and they take the heat for it. If we decided we wanted to live as jugglers for the rest of our lives, we would take heat for it, you know, like Mark says. And I think if we want to talk about sexuality and be honest about sexuality, there are a lot of surprises in this room, you know. And that's a direction we can go. If we want to talk about the church, we can talk about the church, but we know what institutions are like. You don't, you know, you're past 21, anyone 18 knows what institutions are like. I'm not an idealist. I haven't been for a number of years. I got problems with, you know, with people who are idealists. I'm just saying, you know, that I'm not, and that we can talk about sexuality, we can talk about the church, we can talk about what it is to reject the status quo and the heat you take. But I think we're escaping if we put it all in gay and lesbian issues, because it simply isn't a gay and lesbian issue.
I had another answer to Terry's question. Mm-hmm. I agree with Doug, but I would also be inclined to say, forget the party lines, forget right and wrong. Our attitudes here have a lot to do with how safe Allison and Doug and Julia and Janet are out in the world. And that, to me, is way more important than any kind of morally right or wrong. I mean, the fact that they're not physically safe in some places because of who they are, it goes way beyond any intellectual issues or moral issues of right and wrong. And that we can hide in the moral, and we can hide in the intellectual discussion of it, in a way. We can hide in party lines. And skirt around the issue of their safety.
Well, with that impassioned ending, I think I take that as a gift, actually. That I want to thank all of you who've spoken, who shared honestly of your own emotions and the importance of that. This is clearly an emotional issue, and I hope it remains that. I wish that we were all emotionally in the same place, but we're not. But none of us are going to move until we're able to start doing. And Allison wants the last comment.
Yeah, I do want the last comment. I guess I just wanted to say that, you know, we all talk about dialogue and how important that is and how we should be talking about this issue. And to begin with, I'm not ready to leave tonight, even though I'm freezing, because I think there's a lot that needs to be said that hasn't been, and I'll just hang around for a while if anyone else wants to talk. But the other thing is that I've been out to this community, as far as I know, for kind of a long time, and I've known that there are a lot of people that have concerns and real struggles with the notion of homosexuality, and nobody ever asks me about my life. And that saddens me, because I'm not exactly sure why that is, whether it's out of an embarrassment about having dumb questions, or if it's out of a fear of making me feel bad, or whatever it is. But I would love it if people who have any kind of question at all, or any kind of concern at all, would talk to me about that. And I don't know how the other out gay people in this community feel about that, but you know, dialogue needs to happen in this community, and by golly, if we have to schedule it every single time for it to happen, it's going to be few and far between when we get to do that. And so I'd just like to encourage anyone to come visit with me. I'm happy to talk about my life, or to, you know, help try to make some things clear. I have talked with a lot of gay and lesbian people in my life, and I did studies in college and read a million books, and could, you know, I certainly don't know, you know, we all have our different experiences, and everybody has knowledge to share, and I would just hope that people would seek one another out and get information if you need it, or bounce concerns off people, and not just sit around waiting for it to be scheduled on a Thursday night or whatever. I think that's really important.